right. Welcome back to another week of the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, here to hang out with you for the next couple of hours, maybe longer. Play your cards right. We'll see what happens. Hey, Jay.
Good evening, sir.
How are you, sir?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, man.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the wonderful segue we're going to start the show off.
Okay.
As you know, our opening song is Deadlines by one of my favorite Canadian bands, Arkells. Fantastic band. Let's talk about deadlines.
Okay.
Tomorrow.
Uh-oh, what?
Is the deadline.
Oh, no.
For Vladimir Guerrero to report to Dunedin, Florida.
He hasn't reported yet?
He was supposed to report today or tomorrow, and I did not hear any news about him reporting today. It being 11 o'clock at night, I'm assuming he's not
there yet.
Heading into Dunedin in the wee small hours.
He's got deadlines to meet.
He does.
Okay.
He does. He probably has some weight to lose, too.
Probably. From the way he was going recently, yes.
And some hand-eye coordination to reestablish.
Yes.
But it was a big day when it was announced. I guess it was Friday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That Vladimir Guerrero, and I still smile thinking about it, is going to get another shot at the bigs, and it's going to be in Canada. And I'm a happy man from that. It's very good news. Alex, I listened to Alex Anthopoulos' conference call. Called up the Jays and basically asked if we could get some time with him that day to see if we could get something taped for the show. But he took a conference call and they asked that it wasn't that we didn't record it. So we didn't record it. Or
okay.
Maybe we did, but we're not going to play it on air.
No.
And caution, caution, caution seemed to be the mantra.
Yeah.
No expectations. Saying even we do not expect Guerrero to become a top 10 hitter. If he does, this would be the greatest signing in the history of baseball.
Well, I greeted with a bit of cynicism as well.
Yeah, you know.
I wasn't too ecstatic about it. It was, you know, it was the talk of the pub that night. It really was.
It was the talk of the town. It was trending. It was,
yeah.
Vladimir Guerrero trended on Twitter for the first time ever.
Yeah.
In Canada.
Yeah, it was kind of cool to see that, too.
It was
cool. It made you think of what could have been back in the day. But at the same time, yeah, I greeted with a bit of cynicism. I'm skeptical about it, but we'll see. We'll see what shape he's in. Nobody knows, so we'll see what's going on with him.
The news continues to be somewhat Expo-centric in this town.
Yeah.
Which is nice to see.
We've got something for you every week.
The Carter benefit last, I guess now 2 weeks ago, which was just a wonderful Expo's love fest. And then, well, we had our special lunch that we'll tell you all about. Which was fantastic.
Yes, it was.
Jay, Anakin, and I were invited out to lunch by Jonah Carey. And Jonah pulled out his iPhone and put on the voice recorder. And he must have drained that battery. He used it for 2.5 hours. It sat out on that table.
And we could have gone for a lot longer if of us didn't have to leave.
Yeah. I don't know how I didn't have a parking ticket.
You didn't?
No.
That's amazing.
It was pretty awesome.
Someone was on your side that day.
One day, not too far down the road, you will all get to hear our conversation with Jonah. We'll edit it for time and sweariness.
Yeah, there was a lot of bad language involved, but, you know, bunch of guys at a pub talking about baseball. What do you think's going to happen?
Right.
Bunch of angry guys
exactly,
at some point, too.
Right, right. Four guys that lost their ball club. There might be a couple of bad words that come out.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll just beep it out, and you'll see a side to Dave and I that you don't get to see every week on the radio.
That's right. That's right. The uncensored side.
Yeah, the side you would see if you're having a beer with us.
We do our best to restrain ourselves.
We do.
Air.
We do.
I think we do it. Pretty decent job of it.
Sometimes, yeah.
Hey, if our guests say something, that's not our fault,
hey,
right?
Yeah.
You know.
And we're not referring to anything in particular.
No, I mean, there's a little bit of Bedini in all of us.
Of course.
It's a very hockey-esque way to think. We've got a great show for you tonight. We've got, in about 10 minutes' time, we're going to be speaking with the chef de mission for Team Canada at the London Olympics. You guys know him from, Jay, can you believe it was 20 years ago?
Yeah, my goodness. You know, when I found out he had retired, I said, why is he retiring?
Let's tell everybody who we're talking about.
Yeah.
Mark Tewksbury will be on the program tonight. Mark was gold medal winner in Barcelona. I think he won a bronze as well. But the gold was individual breaststroke, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
And wonderful Canadian, a great advocate. And I can't think of anybody better to be representing the team and looking out for our interests in London. And my goodness, Jay, the Olympics are right around the corner. I'm so excited. You can see me here in my Vancouver Olympics jacket.
Yeah, I see you've been rocking that a little bit
lately. Yeah, I've been wearing it a little bit more. The weather dictates that I can wear this a little bit more frequently.
Okay.
That and, you know, I have to get over the self-consciousness. I do look like a Smurf when I wear this.
No, you don't.
Well, it's fully the color of the Smurfs.
Maybe the hat, but not the... Maybe the New York Mets hat.
You don't like my Mets hat, eh?
Leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Why? Gary Carter played for the Mets.
Yeah, I know. So, every expo played with every single major league team.
Right.
Yeah.
No, if I'm going to wear a New York hat, might as well be a Mets hat, not a Yankees hat, right?
Okay. Do you have a disposition or a, you know, inclination to wear New York hats? Is it an automatic thing? Or
no, I just, I have a lot of trouble searching for a baseball cap that I like the way it fits on my head.
Uh-huh.
It's not so much about the team anymore. I mean, I don't have a team.
Are you blaming that awkwardly shaped brain case of yours, Kaufman?
I am. Yes. We're about to get into a little discussion on phrenology here on the Kaufman Show. And I can explain to you all why I wear my Mets cap like I do. Now, I've been searching forever for a Brooklyn Dodgers. Yes, you know what? Look at me. I do like New York-based teams. Hats.
Brooklyn Dodgers.
I can get
you one in 2 seconds.
I found, really?
Yeah.
Like right now?
Is this a hookup for that?
Is this like a toe in the Big Lebowski?
I can get you one. I can hook you up.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
I know people.
In Brooklyn.
Not in Brooklyn. You don't have to be in Brooklyn. Believe me, there's a hat for everything.
I'd love a New York Giants cap.
Yeah.
I think that would be really cool.
That would be cool too. Just wear defunct teams. That's all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Seattle Pilots.
No. I'd get myself a Cleveland Barons jersey.
I think that would be kind of cool.
Yeah, that would. I have never seen one. I've seen a Colorado Rockies
jersey,
the old hockey team. And
well, there's
some
all sorts
Hartford
of companies
Whalers
that specialize
in
that,
of course.
Right?
Yeah. It makes people feel better about themselves when they're wearing a jersey of a team that no longer exists. Hey, well, ask me about my jersey. It's like people with pretentious tattoos. Anyway, go on.
After Mark Tewksbury, we're going to be joined by Matthew Casavant.
Yes.
And we're going to break some rules with him. He's got he's going to come in and tell us all about something called Fight Club. And I know somebody told me that the first rule of Fight Club is to not talk about Fight Club. But how do you promote Fight Club if you don't talk about it?
We're going to have to break some rules. Brad Pitt is going to appear in the room here.
Yeah. Helena Bonham Carter is going to come in and wreak some havoc on us tonight.
Get your rubber gloves ready.
This is the new Jack White album. It's amazing. It's called Blunderbuss. We've also got Shaka Brody up in the house tonight. We're going to call him at the MLB Fan Cave in New York. Try and see how he kept it all together when he met Kate Upton this week.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, poor girl.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
This is the Kaufman Show. And we're just so darn happy to be here. I got no truck with your woman always coming over when I ain't home. And you can't afford to me, baby, try your luck to try to get in my song. But yeah, your mama was a bastard and you plastered face all over the scene. Oh, you got hassled by your daddy, always pushing, trying to make you complain. You brought your tongue, talking trash, now you're trying to bring your... Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. like we said before the commercial, we're just so darn happy to be here. And one of the reasons for that is our next guest, who is, boy, growing up, he was one of my favorite athletes. You know what a nut I am for the Olympics, Jay.
Yes, you are.
How important I find it.
Yep.
And he's now the chef de mission for Team Canada at the 2012 Olympics in London, which is right around the corner. I'm so excited. It feels like I closed my eyes and Vancouver was yesterday. So I can't believe that there's very few more sleeps.
And, I closed my eyes and Seoul, Korea was yesterday.
No joke. I'm sure he could tell us a story about it.
Sure.
I believe that was Mark Tewksbury's first Olympics. Mark, welcome to the Kaufman Show.
Thanks, guys. Nice to be here.
How are you?
Good.
You starting to get extra stressed with it being less than 3 months away?
Not really. I mean, I'm excited. You know, I was named Chef de Mission August of 2010, and it all was really for this, you know, to be the head of the team during the Olympics. So it's just kind of getting to be the time that I get to do my job.
What an incredible honor, isn't it?
It's really been, you know, a huge honor and fascinating, like massive, I guess, leadership lessons for me, great insight into what it takes to not only stage a games, but, you know, what a National Olympic Committee goes through to get their team there. It's been really, really fascinating.
What have you done to prepare? I know that you were in Beijing sort of observing, weren't you?
Actually, I've been at the past couple of games as part of the primetime show.
Oh, right.
With CBC and sort of more of a swimming and analyst, which has, you know, been great. But this is so much broader because I'm, of course, head of the whole team. So lots of learning. I mean, you know, 26 different sports, all kinds of different qualifications still actually going on. So much broader approach, obviously, I'll be taking in London.
How closely are you working with the athletes? And are you able to, I mean, you must have so much wisdom that you can impart upon them.
Well, I think that's probably been the most amazing part of this whole trip is that I still have a really strong connection with the athletes that are competing today. And they really get that I've been there, you know, and I think, you know, we're one of a few national Olympic committees in the world that has a former athlete as their chef de mission. And I think it's a really smart idea. I mean, obviously, it's a little self-serving for me to say that. But I think it's smart because I think in order to set the tone for the team, in order to create a sort of unified spirit on the team, I think the fact that I've been there, the athletes can relate to that, and it just makes that process a little bit easier.
Do you think it adds a little bit of extra pressure to the swimmers?
I don't think so at all, no. I think, you know, my swimming career, gosh, some of the kids weren't even born when I won, right? So, I mean, I maybe live in legend or, you know, a name, but they're probably like, who is that guy? Oh, that's Mark Tewksbury. Oh, okay, hi.
Well, that's and that's crazy to me. First of all, I cannot believe it was 20 years ago. Second of all, when we see you in media, it does not look like you've aged 20 years since those Olympics.
Would, but thank you.
No, but seriously, like, how do you sort of look at that and think, do you, like,
well,
2 decades
funny.
Is such a long time, and you know, on the same side, I'm, for me, 20 years, thinking about it being 20 years ago, like, that's mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I know, time is this crazy thing, and I mean, for sure, I never thought of it quite as intensely as everyone reminding me that it was 20 years ago this year. So, you know, it's there, and it just makes you realize, like, it's going to blink and another 20 years will go, so you better enjoy it while it happens.
We're in conversation with Mark Tewksbury, the chef de mission for the Canadian delegation for London 2012. And, Mark, I want to ask you about this Olympic.ca website. The ads that have come out, the different videos are fantastic. You can tell me a little bit about them.
Sure. Well, I'm glad you like them. Done by Henry Liu, who's a great filmmaker in Canada. Give Your Everything is the campaign, and it shot, I don't know how you describe it. You can maybe do it as better than I can, but, you know, very, very leading edge and like a rock video or something, right? Fantastic music that I think captures the intensity of the Olympic journey and its snapshots of many of our different sports and athletes and what they're doing right now day in and day out on the training field. And I think it's just great to put athletes front and center of a campaign, and kudos to the Olympic Committee for doing it.
This is such a new concept, it seems, in Canada. And I maybe you can compare to the way that you were profiled and treated 20 years ago or 24 with Seoul, and the way that athletes were underappreciated back then. You know, you think of 88, and it was, you know, the only athlete that was really profiled going into it was probably Ben Johnson.
Yeah, and certainly out of it too.
Right.
So I couldn't resist. You know, it's so different. We were really reliant upon some media interest, right? So if you're a metal favorite, you know, for sure, you were lucky probably to get a profile or some sort of reporter wanting to talk to you before the games. But I think the difference now is that the Olympic Committee, across the board, the Canadian Olympic Committee has really taken us a leading stand to say, listen, we are athlete-centered, we are coach-centered, we are performance-centered. We want the athletes in the minds of Canadians more than just once every 2 years or 4 years during games. We want to, you know, sort of help them get some of the recognition that they think the athletes deserve. And it's pretty consistent. It's me, a chef de mission, a former athlete, this ad campaign with athletes at the center of it, all kinds of athlete representation in the organization. It's just a really, I think, the right fit and the right time for all of this, and I'm so glad it's when I'm kind of back in it.
Would it be fair to say, Mark, that it's sort of trying to imitate the Australian model and seeing the success that they had on based out of Sydney?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I never would have thought of that. And I, you know, my short answer would be no, but I would say a little bit of a but. You know, I think what Australia's always done so well is that they've had just a very natural amateur sport or Olympic sport psyche in the country. They appreciate sport hugely. And I think, you know, I guess Canada captured a little bit of that out of Vancouver. And I think that the games and the athletes themselves transcended just those 16 days and represented something bigger for people in Canada. And I think that's what the Olympic Committee is excited about and trying to make sure that it can maintain.
Which is a difficult thing, and I'll tell you, I felt it firsthand. I worked the games in Vancouver, and I have never felt so Canadian. But I wonder if that can be done with the games being on foreign soil.
Well, for sure it's different, but I think what's happened is the spirit of the team, you know, the whole notion of the Canadian government and the Olympic Committee and Own the Podium, supporting athletes like never before, targeting people that really have a shot at a medal and making them feel like they've got all the support they need to be their best when it counts. Those are the kind of things that you can certainly sustain and maintain, and that's the goal. It's just to make sure that that spirit that happened in Vancouver, you know, it's difficult when it's not a home games, of course, to ignite a country like a home games does. But I think that for sure people took a different view on the performance of athletes, and I'm sure, and I, you know, certainly hope that that will translate to the summer kids too.
Mark, who are you excited to see that we don't necessarily know about yet, that everybody's going to know about by the time London rolls around?
Well, you know, I love how you phrase that question, because that is the person, and I don't know who that person is. But that is, to be honest.
Well, there are several at every Olympics, right?
There are. Well, and Canada, interestingly, you know, we've had a tough time of converting people that really aren't on the radar. They're called sort of the dark horses. They're between sort of ranked 9th and 16th in the world, and that pop through and win a medal or even win the whole thing. We historically haven't been great at that. So I would love if a Canadian had a breakthrough performance like that and just electrified the team in London.
Mark, before we let you go, I don't know if you've commented on it or not, but we talk a lot about the You Can Play campaign started by the Burks on our show, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it.
Well, you know, if you can play, you can play.
Perfect.
That's the campaign.
Pretty simple, yeah.
You know, I think it's really healthy. I know that professional sport has had a challenge even getting any kind of dialogue about some of these issues, you know, to make sure that everyone has a safe place to play sport, I think is really important, regardless of, you name it, right? Color and gender and sexual orientation, whatever that might be. I think if you can play, you should play, and it's a great way to express yourself as a human being.
Do you think that there are similar barriers in amateur sport?
Yes, and for sure. I think sport in general is still a little bit of a challenge, but interesting, you know, I am your chef de mission, certainly out. So in some ways, I think that there's, you know, without me being the gay chef, there's a really nice role model there that sort of says something in and of itself.
Well, I think it does, and I'm sorry to be laughing at that comment, but that was hilarious. but yeah, it does. It says something about Canada, and I wonder if 20 years ago there could have been an openly gay chef de mission for Barcelona.
I don't think, you know. I mean, I know for sure. I actually turned to my partner the other day and just said, can you imagine, like, if we knew each other when we were young in Calgary, if I said to you at 17, hey, I'm going to go win the Olympics, and then guess what? I'm going to do all these things. I'm going to criticize the IOC, and I'm going to be really straightforward about all these things in my life, and then I'm going to lead the team as an openly gay man in 23 years. What do you think? Like, it just would have been unthinkable. So it's amazing to me, you know, as a personal journey for sure, but I think what it represents as well is pretty cool.
It must feel good having called out the IOC and called them on their corruption and called out Juan Antonio Samaranch, and now to be able to, you're going to walk into that stadium leading Canada. That's really damn cool, Mark.
Well, you know, thanks. And I just came back also because I really do believe in the leadership of the Olympic Committee in Canada and where we're going as a nation. So for me, that was really easy to support the team.
Mark Tewksbury is the chef de mission for London 2012. We will all be watching and cheering you on from Canada. Thank you so much, Mark.
Oh, thanks. You guys do a great job. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks. All the best. Have a great night.
Bye.
There he goes, Mark Tewksbury.
And deservedly so.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like to use the words great Canadian very often.
But he really is.
But it's very clear that he is, and what he's done is so impressive over the years, and he deserves to be in the position that he is, and we wish him all the best.
20 years ago, the Barcelona Olympics. That's crazy.
Yep.
Remember the
24 years ago, the Seoul Olympics, which I remember.
I remember too. I remember, I remember the race.
Yeah.
I remember the race like it was yesterday, but yes. The 92 Olympics, there were a lot more than just the opening ceremony. There was a blind guy with an bow and arrow to light the cauldron.
Was he blind?
He was blind.
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was.
He was not.
Somebody's going to look. We'll look it up during the break.
Yenny, look that up. I'm not sure about that.
You can call me on it if I'm wrong, okay?
That's the whole idea. That's why I want John to look it up.
Or we can take a commercial and everybody will just forget.
Yeah.
Trust me, if the guy's
that's
blind,
what you want, eh?
If the guy's blind, I'll remind you.
Yeah.
Our thanks to Mark Tewksbury. This is The Kaufman Show. And we'll be back.
On one fine March morning, I bid New Orleans adieu. I took the road to Jackson Town, my fortune to renew. I cursed all foreign money, no credit could I gain, which filled my heart with longing for the lakes of Pontchartrain.
Welcome back to the show. You are you're running out of time to see this guy in concert. This is Joseph Kearns, who stole the show at our Gary Carter benefit for the Sarah Cook Fund. And as of right now, only two more shows booked. So I strongly suggest that you get yourself down to McLean's Pub this weekend, either on Friday night or Saturday night, and see this incredibly talented young man who is going places and, frankly, is already there.
Creole girl by the lakes of Pontchartrain.
He's also a hell of a soccer fan, Jay.
Yeah, and he's actually a very big boxing fan as
there
well.
There you go. I'm thinking maybe we can get him in studio. And although I don't know.
He knows his stuff.
I don't know if people are going to be able to understand him.
Yeah.
Maybe if everybody at home has a couple of shots of Jameson, then we'll all even out.
I have a little bit of experience working at an Irish pub, so I understand him clearly. But
yeah, I've hung out with enough
Irishmen over the years.
Yeah. Well, something about this town, it kind of attracts them, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
A lot of Irish in this town. And
it's going to be great. I can't wait to see him.
Especially in the joints we frequent. But Joseph Kearns will be at the McLean's Pub 20th anniversary party this weekend. Friday night, he'll be playing a half an hour set. to close out the night. And Saturday he'll be doing a full two and a half hour show.
It may be 2.5 hour. It may just go longer than that.
Well,
it
depends on how hard my co-host Jay Farrar cracks the whip on him down there, right?
I'll be emceeing too, so come on down and check it out. It'll be a lot of fun.
If you're lucky, maybe you'll run into Brian Wilde.
Yeah. It's pretty clear that he might be around.
Joseph is here and staying with Brian right now.
Yeah.
Which, boy, that's a party.
And we have beer, too.
They had a big concert at Brian's house last week. And Joe and Noel out on the back in the patio in the back playing for everybody. It was fantastic. You could see the neighbors rocking out from across the alleyway. Yeah, it was super cool. It was super cool. So we've got a guest coming up in a few minutes time after Jimmy gives you an update and lets you know that the Rangers lulled the Devils to sleep tonight.
I guess
the Devils kind of lulled everybody to sleep tonight, and the Rangers still happened to win. But we've got Matt Cazavant. We're going to talk a little boxing. We're going to break some pretty big rules. And we're going to go out on Joseph Kearns, Lakes of Pontchartrain. This is the Huffman Show.
So now it's fare thee well, my Creole girl. I may never see you no more. But I'll never forget your kindness at the cottage by. It's getting warm, it's getting warmer, it's getting closer to the answer. I was working on my grammar, I was driving in my Chevy. It was fast, but not the fastest. I was listening to Cactus, and you really gotta practice. If you wanna get that heavy, she was there on the highway. Like a Turkish cymbal crashing. Got high, got higher. Was it smoke or true desire? Did we start that forest fire as we flicked away the ashes? Hit that splash in the gasoline.
We have an important bulletin on the Kaufman Show. Antonio Rebolo is the Paralympic archer who lit the Olympic cauldron by shooting an arrow, igniting it during the opening ceremony of the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona. When he was 8 months old, he contracted polio, with both legs affected, the right one severely. Yep, your host was wrong.
I'm just waiting for the apology.
I apologize to the family of Antonio Rebolo.
Well, no, you have
to all of the fine people of Spain, and really to anybody that took that for the gospel truth that it truly, obviously wasn't. I
apologize to Jay Farrar, too.
Oh, sorry, Jay.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jay, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm now apologizing for apologizing. I don't know how I went from the guy was blind to that his legs were, that he had, I don't even know. It doesn't say.
You knew that he had some kind of disability.
I knew that he was a Paralympian.
Okay. All right. You were halfway there.
No, well, I now see the folly of my ways. From now on, we will...
No pun intended.
None. No. Every single pun intended. Come on. That was really fun with Mark Tewksbury.
Yeah, he's... what a nice guy.
Yeah,
so nice. Why has he got to be so nice?
We will... good thing that he's going to be running the show out there and looking after our athletes.
The guy knows what he's doing.
Really, really cool. And I could imagine that if you're in trouble out there or you have something and you have a question, you're nervous, something, anything... He'd be a pretty comfortable, comforting voice to...
I think so. He literally has a comforting voice.
Yeah, exactly. We both felt very comfortable.
I felt so safe.
Well, that... good. I mean, if you were an athlete, even better.
Yeah.
But good.
Yeah.
If he can do that to the media as well
some
as
nerves.
The...
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well. I hope they're all calm now, although I know our next guest makes you very nervous.
Me?
Yeah.
No.
I can see it.
Okay.
You're trembling.
Am I? That's weird.
From Eye of the Tiger Management, he's also a regular contributor to the franchise, the morning show on this fine station, TSN 990. It's Matt Cazavant. Hello, sir.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure. How are you?
Doing fine. I'm enjoying myself. Ready to talk some boxing here?
Yeah, we're. I'm a little hesitant, though, because I know that the first rule of Fight Club is to not talk about Fight Club. And as Jay pointed out to me...
The second rule of Fight Club is we don't talk about Fight Club. So what are we going to do now?
Yeah, that's a nice nice play on words there. But the obviously from the movie, the reference from the movie. But in this case, we are going to talk about Fight Club and talk about it twice even.
All right. All well, right. Let's
break both rules.
Let's start it off.
Right. Well, it's this Saturday night. I mean, next Saturday night. Pardon me. May 19th. You're going to have Thierry Jean face Cosme Rivera. It's a four-fight Fight Club series. Going to be held at the Holiday Inn. This is going to be the first one. Next Saturday night, held at the Holiday Inn in Pointe Claire. And the goal, really, of these events is going to lead Thierry Jean to an eventual title shot. And you have here a fighter in Thierry Jean who's emerged from prospect to contender. And now these fights are going to showcase if he's ready or not for the official title shot. This is an NABF 12-round fight. And the NABF gets you the higher rankings into the WBC. And that's what you eventually, for Thierry, for one of the four major sanctioning bodies, which includes the WBC, that's the goal. And it starts with Saturday night, an eight-fight card at the Holiday Inn in Pointe Claire. And TSN 990 will be also broadcasting that event this upcoming Saturday.
I have to say, I'm really intrigued by the idea of a fight being there at the Holiday Inn in Pointe Claire. Now,
not your typical venue, right?
Well, no, and so much more exciting than going to the Bell Center.
Well, I think for the most part, Bell Center should be reserved for mega fights when you have a Jean-Pascal Bernard Hopkins, you have a Lucien Boutte, you know, Librado Andrade fight, where you know you're going to guarantee have people approximately 13,000 or up in attendance. When you have some of these smaller shows at the Bell Center, you know, it's not the best atmosphere. I think you'd rather have it in a ballroom like the Holiday Inn, where it's going to be seat capacity approximately 400 people. So there's not a bad seat in the house. You get some really exciting fights. This card is prospects against tough challenges in order for them to get to that next stage. And obviously the Holiday Inn is a good place to have a fight where if you want to get a good seat, you want to have a good atmosphere, I think it's a really nice place to have it.
Not to mention that your hotel after party is like ready to go.
Yeah, it's a good point. We're not sure. Maybe the after party will be held also somewhere else, you know, officially. But the Holiday Inn also, obviously, you're really close, really close by.
There's an intimacy.
First rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club. The second rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
See,
broken.
What are we doing? We're in major trouble right now.
There's an intimacy. I don't know, Dave, if you've ever been to a small venue for a boxing or fighting event.
No.
Very different. You can hear the blows.
Only the Bell Center, actually.
Yeah, you can hear the sweat hitting the mat. I mean, it's very intimate. You feel like you're in the middle of the ring. So it's actually quite stimulating when you're there.
And I've met so many people who do not necessarily watch boxing on television, but when they're at a live event, they really get into it. You know, it's hard not to when some of these guys are competing at that highest level and exchanging blows in front of the crowd. And obviously, like Jay was saying, you hear the punches and all of that and the impact of it. You get a lot of fans into it, and people who are not necessarily mainstream or hardcore boxing fans get into it, especially in those smaller venues. So it's really a good place to come see an event.
And I'm one of them. I am not a huge fan of any kind of fighting, but I went to UFC at the Bell Center and loved it. Had the best time, thought it was just totally got caught up in the emotion of the whole thing.
It's really one of those events, especially if you're close enough to see to the ring. If you're far, it's not really, obviously not recommending, but obviously in a case of the Holiday Inn, you're not going to be far enough to not see the action. When you actually get a good view, it's really one of those events that it's worth being live. There's nothing like the atmosphere, especially when you get into those, the build-up, you get the undercard fights all the way to the main fight, and that's really, when the atmosphere is at its most electric. And it's a really cool thing.
So there are eight fights on the card. It's the Holiday Inn in Pointe Claire on Saturday night, which is May 19th. Where do people get tickets, and how much are they?
Admissions.com is the place to go under the boxing page. I think, obviously go to sports first, and then obviously boxing. So you're looking at tickets ranging from 60 to then, I believe, about 250, depending on, because there's tables also and all of the above. But I think for mostly, the tickets and the seats, they're going to be from ranging $60 to $85. For the seats outside of the tables.
Oh, you're really getting your money's worth. Oh, yeah, to $85. Well,
And you're getting, eight, like I said, you're getting you would pay for the same amount in the Bell Center where you'd be in much higher up. So you're getting a lot closer to the action. And these are really good fights. Also on the undercard, you have guys like Nicholson Poulard fighting Lionel Thompson. Lionel Thompson's an American prospect. Nicholson Poulard is the local guy, but he's a veteran who's trying to get, trying to play spoiler in this fight. One fight away from having, these bigger shots at a light heavyweight. You have guys like Baha Laham, Gisele Maduma. So you have quality prospects who are also entertaining. And that's really a key because sometimes you have quality fighters who don't necessarily have an entertaining style. But these guys do bring it in the ring and are going to be facing challenges as well. So you're going to expect some good action in the throughout the evening.
I'd imagine, it's Eye of the Tiger management. And you'd think that they're especially trying to create some buzz and have some, you don't want people going to this fight and then thinking it's... Like so
are
often
you
you'll
referencing
watch
Rocky here.
Well, no, but you'll watch a championship fight and you'll hear the crowd boo. And that's the last thing, especially something like this where it's young guys where they're hungry, they're driven, they're trying to fight in bigger venues, they're trying to make a name for themselves. You're going to see exciting boxing.
Yeah, I think a lot of these fighters have to keep in mind that this is also a business. You know, as long as they get the victory, I know that's key, but they also try to have to do it in an entertaining style because the fans are going to demand to see you again. If you bring entertainment to your fights, it doesn't matter how, you know, good a fighter you are. There's some world title fighters throughout the world who are not entertaining at all and basically cannot get on television no matter how good their records are because, you know, you still have to bring an entertaining style. So I think these fighters are very conscious of that. And when you get a guy like Zaire who's in the main event against Cosme Rivera, you're going to get one of those action fights because Zaire is a boxer puncher. He's a boxer first, but he's not afraid to throw combinations. He's not going to bore the fight out. And Cosme Rivera is one of these typical, you know, kind of Mexican, come straight forward, good chin, solid offense, who's been in there with a lot of the best in the division. We're looking at Andre Berto, Alfredo Angulo. He's been on HBO before. So you know you're going to get some action in that main event for sure.
Now, you're going to be doing the, you've got the ringside, you're doing the play-by-play?
No, Eric Thomas, I believe, is going to be doing the play-by-play.
All right.
And I'm going to be, you know, color commentary. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on because we're probably going to be on the broadcast from what I've been told from the whole show, not just the two main fights. So even the undercards, there's going to be guests coming on. Also, you know, some celebrities in the boxing world and people attending the show are going to be coming on the show as well to, you know, discuss during the undercard fights leading up to the two main fights around probably 9:30, 10 p.m.
I would imagine you're excited.
Oh, for sure. I mean, this is really, really cool for me. Obviously, first time going to be color commentating on some of these action fights. And obviously, it's a great opportunity. I'm happy to be able to do it with Eric next Saturday night.
We're with Matt Cazavant from Eye of the Tiger Management. You can hear him fairly often on the morning show.
Well, the franchise show on Sunday mornings, weekly at about 8:20. So every Sunday morning, we recap usually the fights from the Saturday night because boxing main fights are always Saturday night, or we'll preview the upcoming big events. So Sunday mornings at around 8:25 is where you get some weekly boxing talk with Gary and Nick.
I've done the early segments with those guys. It's rough to get up on a Sunday morning. And
I mean, yeah, my schedule, like a couple of weeks ago, I was at the Mayweather event in Las Vegas. I was waking up at all sorts of times for radio interviews, and you work around it. You know, it's cool. You wake up, go take a nap afterwards. Sometimes the boxing on Saturday nights end at 1 a.m., so you're, you know, back awake at 6 a.m., quick night rest, but it's all worth it. You know, it's hard work, dedication, as Floyd Mayweather would say.
And way less stressful than actually being in the ring, too, Matt.
Oh, no, I guarantee, for sure.
Let's take a little break, Jimmy, and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about boxing and its the hold that it has on the city and that it has. Boxing used to be massive in Montreal.
Yeah, and it seems to be making a comeback as well.
Matt said something about typical Mexican fighters. I go straight to Roberto Duran.
Oh, jeez.
Panama, Roberto Duran, but I understand your
point. Oh, is he? Okay, well, that was very racist.
Oscar De La Hoya, maybe you're thinking?
Well, I was thinking about No Mas.
But not from Montreal.
The No Mas fight was here, wasn't it?
No, the No Mas was the rematch in New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
The first fight was held here.
Okay.
Where Duran won.
We are with an expert.
Yep. The brawl in Montreal.
And you'll be able to hear him live on TSN 990 next Saturday night. 8 cards. That's going to be some exciting.
Yep. Quality fighters, too. 15 of the 16 fighters have winning records.
Yes. Very good point.
So, you know.
Boy, that one guy just doesn't stand a chance, eh?
No, he's
well, it's because he's facing Chris Plaitis, who's in his pro debut. So
right.
Usually, you know, when a guy's first fight out, you're going to give him somebody who hopefully can win, you know. That's the goal.
let's just school Kaufman on boxing a little bit.
I
just took Matt's side for no reason.
Pardon?
Go ahead.
I'm always willing to learn, man. That's why he's here. I imagine that there's some other idiots out there like me that just don't know much about this.
Hey, we're here to educate, right?
That's right.
Don't know much about archery at Olympics either.
I believe that is... Pardon me that my Paralympic archery knowledge is not up to par. This is the Kaufman Show. I'm going to go study. We'll be back in a minute.
Bring your smile.
Welcome to the Kaufman Show. Or welcome back, for that matter. We online yet?
No.
All right, everybody, you can catch the podcast if you've missed any of this. www.thekaufmanshow.podbean.com or on iTunes. I do like that iTunes thing. I think it's cool that I type in three quarters of the name Kaufman and it says Kaufman Show.
You love that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's you know, it's like autocorrect, right?
Yeah. Especially when you don't know how to spell your own name. It helps out.
I don't. I often.
Two Fs?
I spell it like a stadium in Kansas City all the time. We're with Matt Kazavon from Eye of the Tiger Promotions. They've got an awesome fight up this weekend, and it's a shame that we can't talk about it.
Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club. The second rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
Ah, too bad, Brad. We're talking about Fight Club tonight.
That's really an underground classic, that movie, I think. I'm not really liked by the critics, but I haven't met someone who's seen it who doesn't like it.
I did not know that the critics disapproved of that movie. I don't remember that.
I think it was too dark.
It got lukewarm reviews.
Really?
I don't think people got the gist of it, didn't understand. They were probably expecting a different kind of movie. But I honestly believe that it's one of the best movies of the last 20 years.
The book was pretty awesome, too.
Yes.
It's
I didn't read the book.
Definitely worth your time.
Okay.
You'll enjoy it.
I know the end now.
I was going to say, it's very similar to the film. Yeah. It's, what's his name? Is it Chuck Palahniuk?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, good author.
Okay.
There we go.
And I know David Fincher directed the movie.
Yes,
that's
he
all
did.
I know.
That's my extensive knowledge of
books.
He's a heck of a director. Also, I find David Fincher.
David Fincher is a great director. He's put out a lot of classics.
You were tweeting about movies tonight, weren't you, Matt?
Yeah, actually, I was just watching some of Guy Ritchie's classic films. I was watching the first one, I think, or one of his first major ones. Forget it, Lock, Stock,
and Two Smoking Barrels.
And it's kind of the same type of movie as Snatch or Rock and Roll. And I just love how the writing in that movie. And I don't understand how he with all those characters, how it doesn't lose track of all of them, but really. To me, they're great movies.
Now he does Sherlock Holmes. God.
He directed Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, he did.
Wow.
Both of them.
Well, I guess that's the kind of...
So what happens?
That's the kind of creative influence that Madonna will... and Jose Canseco and A-Rod can attest to it, right?
Yeah. And a bunch of others.
Mark Messier.
A whole bunch of others.
Mark Messier!
A lot of others.
Oh, that's just beyond
Many
weird.
Others.
All right, back to boxing.
Yeah, sorry.
Back to boxing. To me, Matt, what I find the most interesting is that for a long period of time, boxing dominated in this town. I mean, weekly boxing matches at the Montreal Forum. Right now, you think of Montreal as a UFC town.
I think it would depend. I think some maybe on the English side more so than on the French side.
Is that the divide?
I still think, for the most part, the French side is much more pro-boxing than the English side. And when you look at the media-wise. Now, I still think that there's room for both the French people like the UFC and both, obviously English-speaking people like boxing as well. I think, and you're seeing some of the emergence when guys like Jean-Pascal and Lucien Boutte fight for world titles, you get kind of that vibe in the city, still now. I think, I remember when I was talking to Russ Anberry when we were in Vegas for Mayweather Cotto a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling me all the stories of the Fort Paul Sauvé, how Régis Lévesque used to put on these cards weekly at the Paul Sauvé, and how people used to go for these boxing events back in the 70s and 80s. And it just, like you said, the boxing always in the past, in the 80s mostly, was much more of a mainstream sport than it is now. But it's still like when you get these big fights, when you get even events boxing-wise, it's a much bigger city, Montreal is, in terms of popularity than in other places across, the United States and the world. So I think it's still definitely a fight down. And if you get, one of these big fights in the city, you definitely feel the pulse and the vibe go up.
Oh, 100%. And when it's on HBO or even when Hopkins and Jean fought in Quebec City,
right.
Montreal was all over that.
Right, the whole province was covering that, covering that fight. And boxing is definitely a landmark here for the city, I would think.
Now, vis-a-vis UFC, do you prefer one to the other? Do you see the value in both?
I'm definitely a boxing guy. Probably maybe because I'm more of an old school guy. I think that boxing, to me, the sweet science aspect of it, when boxing is at its best, to me, is really top notch. I think with the UFC, and I respect it, I don't know why people always feel the need to compare the two sports. Obviously, it's a combat sport.
Well, I think they're pretty easy to compare.
Well, yeah, but I think also a lot of that is due because the UFC is still fairly recent and obviously it's still up and coming.
Sure.
There's that need to kind of, oh, we're going to dismiss boxing as, you know, up with the old and in with the new with the UFC. But if you look at racing, for example, that I think that's the best comparison. You have the Formula One, you have Indy, you have NASCAR, and I don't see people every day talking about, well, is NASCAR, you know, going to kill Formula One? I think if you're a racing fan, you're maybe some that you're going to gravitate towards more than the other.
No, but it killed
they
Indy.
All have, they all, what?
I said, but it killed Indy.
Maybe, but I just think it's kind of like, to me, the best comparison is racing. You have different leagues, all globalizing, obviously, racing and combat sports. You have MMA, and obviously, more specifically, the UFC, and you have boxing. And boxing is the, you know, the art form of just stand-up fighting and with the hands, obviously, and the UFC combines a bunch of other things, but I think there's room for both, definitely, and I still think boxing is still alive. If you look at some of the numbers Mayweather-Cotto did on pay-per-view, you know, 1.5 million buys, and I think if you get a Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, that would smash anything the UFC could offer at this point. So there's still definitely
Will we get a Mayweather-Pacquiao fight? Well, what do you think? Everybody's telling me no.
Yes. I think at first what everybody was saying is that, of course, it's going to happen. There's just too much money for it not to happen.
They've been saying that for years, though, Matt.
That's right. I think the first time I remember the negotiations started in late 2009. They were looking for a 2010 fight, so you're looking at now over 2 years. And what happens is sometimes, unfortunately, boxing egos get in the way, and it's a sport that has a hard time sometimes of getting those big fights. And it hurts the sport, obviously. I think at this point, there is a bit of optimism. When I was in Vegas for the Mayweather-Cotto fight, talks now are kind of, maybe Floyd is really trying to get this fight done. In the past, he's been the one blamed, saying, oh, Floyd doesn't want this fight. You know, he's trying to just protect his record or whatever. But I think at this point, he's really trying to get the Manny Pacquiao fight, but he wants to do it negotiating with Pacquiao directly and not through his promoter, which is Top Rank, that used to be Mayweather's promoter.
Right.
So that's the issue right now. I do think if it doesn't happen by spring of next year, then forget about it. And if it doesn't happen by spring of next year, you're also risking the element that the fight won't be as good as it could be, you know, right now.
Right.
I still think at this point, Mayweather and Pacquiao have slowed down, you know, in subtle ways. They're ending, I think, their prime. Floyd now is going to jail June 1st for, you know, about 3 months. So we don't know how that's going to, you know, how that's going to relate when he comes out of it.
Yeah. And what's that for?
It's for basically a plea bargain. From a multiple, not multiple felonies, but multiple probably, arrests. And the main one has been the domestic violence he had with his ex-wife or ex-girlfriend. And that's the one. He had also misdemeanors, so he pleaded out. Basically, what he said was for the benefit of his family. He was not guilty, but he pleaded to basically stop the media pressure and whatnot. So three months expecting in jail, probably less than that with good behavior. For Floyd Mayweather.
There's a catch-22 here when you're talking about the Mayweather-Pacquiao. If Mayweather doesn't take the fight, he'll have his perfect record. But in his legacy, when people speak about him in the future,
the doubt will always remain.
They'll always say, but he never fought Pacquiao.
Yep. Yeah.
So there's a catch-22 for the guy.
And that's been with Floyd for a few years now because, I mean, he took some retirement, some hiatus from the sport a few years ago, and people are saying, well, that's because he's not fighting some of these best, you know, fighters, some of the best fights that are available. So I think legacy, obviously, he's always talking about it. Oh, I'm undefeated. I'm one of the best of all time. But guys like Sugar Ray Leonard are not undefeated, and their legacies are much greater at this point than Floyd Mayweather. People respect the fact when you face the best, even if you lose, you know, people are still going to respect you. I think Floyd shouldn't be blamed completely, though, for the lack of the Pacquiao fight. But I think at the end of the day, he's mostly the one driving, you know, this issue. It started with the random drug testing, the urine and blood. Pacquiao apparently wasn't too happy with that one.
Right.
Floyd
right.
demanded that, even though commissions never really demanded. I think it's good for the sport that he actually tries to have the Olympic-style drug testing. Now, apparently, Pacquiao has said, yes, I agree with that. Now, the issue is money. And Floyd has said, I'll guarantee Pacquiao $40 million. Like, Pacquiao, you can have $40 million guaranteed. It's the most you'll ever make. And then Floyd takes all of the pay-per-view revenue numbers, but that can be in excess of, you know, of $100 million. So you're looking at Floyd making much more money than Pacquiao, and I think it's a much closer financially than, you know, closer to 50-50 than what Floyd thinks it is.
Well, if we're going to talk about it on a little bit of a smaller scale and a little bit more accessible, because I know that if this fight goes down at Yankee Stadium, like I hope it does, like they initially talked about when they...
No, I think if it happens, it's Las Vegas is going to be...
Is it?
I'm sure. They also talk about Cowboy Stadium because Jerry Jones was
That's
willing
right,
to pony up a lot of money. Pacquiao has fought at Cowboy Stadium. I really think that if Floyd and Manny Pacquiao were to fight, it's going to happen in Las Vegas because there's just so much much money that's available for the casinos. It's so important for them to have these type of boxing events. So I think regardless, even they would try to build a new stadium, and they were trying to build an outdoor stadium that could, you know, seat a lot more people than a regular casino for that fight if it were to happen. But I think it's going to happen in Las Vegas if it's, you know, if the fight were to be made.
Where did
I
the Las Vegas posse play?
They played
did they do it there?
I think at the University at UNLV.
Yeah, I've seen that stadium.
Yeah,
Thomas and Mack Center.
That might be it. Yeah,
yeah. I think Thomas and Mack Center.
Wow, good
the one.
Call there.
With Anthony Calvillo at the helm for the Las Vegas posse.
Right, of course.
Wow.
Just to date ourselves a little bit, Matt Cazavant, the Fight Club series. It is the first of how many four fights that
it's about. It's going to be about a four fight series. Okay. Three in the West Island, one in the United States. This is the first one next Saturday night, May 19th. Zierk Jean headlining against Cosme Rivera. Admissions.com is the place to go for tickets, and it will be broadcast next Saturday night on TSN 990 as well.
Look forward to hearing it. Matt Cazavant, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thanks, Dave. Jay, pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Nice to have a Cazavant on the station, isn't it?
Yes, it is. The smoke is sending signals out in cold. Yeah. These safety suits, these parachutes, I don't know. I'm gonna stop, drop, roll. When all these walls come down, they'll shake us. We fight, but not to breathe, not to breathe.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. That was, or those were, the Jimmy Riggers. I'm going to make her mine. And if you are in or near that beautiful province that they call Ontario, go check out the Jimmy Riggers. They're going to be touring all over that fine province over the next 10, 12 days. May 16th, Peterborough. May 17th, Ottawa. May 18th, Kitchener. May 20th, Windsor. The 23rd in Toronto. The 24th in Toronto. The 25th in Woodstock. The 26th in Kingston. People are going to know who the Jimmy Riggers are in about 10 days, aren't they, Jay?
Yes, they will.
Kind of exciting.
And I'm glad they will, because if you don't know who they are, you're missing out.
Canada's truest contribution to the alt-country genre. At least that's what Exclaim magazine says. I say they rock. I say they were the headliner at the Gary Carter benefit because I wanted them to be. And they're awesome. So we wish them a wonderful tour. And, I don't know, maybe we'll check in with them next week, see how the tour is going. I think that could be a fun little segment, couldn't it?
Yeah.
The Riggers on the road.
Those guys are funny, too.
They're hilarious.
Yeah, it's a good listen.
Maybe we could get David Pierce to do the entire interview in his Brian Britt accent. It'll make like five of you laugh, I'm sure.
I love obscure impressions, and he was the master of it. He knew how to do every local anchor in this town, and he did them well.
His Mitsumi Takahashi was insane.
Yeah.
I don't know how he did that.
That's a difficult one.
We do appreciate the Jimmy Riggers and their fine, fine music. And again, we hope that all of you out in Ontario, we know we have a lot of listeners in Ottawa, in Windsor, and especially in Toronto. You can see that on the... On the Facebook page, which if you haven't liked yet, what's going on?
Come on.
Come on. Come on.
Stream's up, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, stream is up.
Hey, all right.
So all those listeners get to tune in And we apologize for the delay.
Yeah, I think we should rebroadcast the Tewksbury interview. What do you think?
Okay.
Yeah, I think, Jimmy, what do you think? I think we should do that. All right, maybe next break, when we take our break, we'll queue up the Mark Tewksbury interview because, well, it's not too often we get to have a hero of Canadian athletics on the show.
That's right.
And he is the chef de mission for London 2012. I can't believe it's 2012, and I can't believe the Olympics are here. And yeah. I know that just sounds so weird, and I probably feel that way. I felt that way. Barcelona, Atlanta, Sydney, Athens, and all the way through Beijing. But, yeah, where does the time go, man? It's unbelievable.
Nobody knows.
Hey, we're sitting here tonight with Matt Casavant.
Yeah.
And all I can think of is his dad calling the Cordero hit down the line, which I was at the game, but definitely went home and turned on RDS and heard Denis Casavant call that play. And asked him, I would have thought he was like 30. Just such, so mature, so knowledgeable. He's 21 years old. Matt is 21 years old, which means that he does not remember Will Cordero's hit in 92.
Yeah, I don't remember being 21. There's a reason for that.
How long ago was that for you, Jay? How old are you?
I'm 35. It was 14 years ago.
So you're only a year older than your brother then?
I am only a year older than my brother who turned 34 yesterday. I'm 16 months older than him. He just looks a lot better than I do. Happy birthday, little bro, by the way.
I might as well say on air my favorite Anakin Slade compliment that I've ever heard. When my sister met Anakin Slade, and I think you met my sister at the benefit a couple weeks ago. She walked right up to him and went, "Oh my goodness, you have the nicest skin of any man I've ever met."
He's an artist. He's an artist. He hasn't worked a day in his life. That's the problem.
That's rough. That's not fair.
No, he works actually very, very hard.
He works incredibly hard.
He does. He's up 16 hours, 17 hours a day doing all kinds of things, working charities, and he's got a lot of things coming up, and I'm proud of him.
Yeah, and in fact, next week we'll be joined in studio by a gentleman named Mark Brody, who is putting on an Alzheimer's benefit called A Night to Remember, which I think is very clever.
Mark Brody of Eye to Eye?
Eye to Eye?
Never mind.
Okay.
I got a buddy named Mark Brody. I don't know if it's the same guy.
Well, I'm imagining it's the same guy because your brother's playing the benefit.
Yeah, Mark Brody, Eye to Eye.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a local hip-hop talent as well.
Is he really?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
And he's a good friend of mine.
And a real estate agent.
Okay.
Maybe it's a different Mark Brody.
I don't know. He was at the benefit. No.
He was at the Carter Benefit.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That's okay. Mark Brody.
All right, well, Mark is putting on a wonderful event that I will be in attendance at on June the 2nd on Saturday night, and it's called A Night to Remember. You can help me with this name. Is it John Medeski?
Sounds good.
Okay. He's a UFC fighter.
Yes, John Medeski.
He will be there.
Yes.
Louis LeBlanc will be there.
Yes.
And Anakin Slade will be there.
A friend of my brother is Louis LeBlanc, not to drop names, but they become friends. And they talk.
All right. So Casavant's going to name drop Russ Amber, and you're going to name drop that your brother's friends with a Hab. What do you got?
What do I got?
Yeah. It's your
turn. I got James McCartney, my friend. That's who I've got.
Jay calls me today and says, we almost got James McCartney on the show. And honestly, like, you know, anybody who listens to the show who knows me, I know my music. But I did not. The name didn't ring a bell, and I wrote back.
Yeah, the name McCartney. Didn't
I wrote
ring
back
a bell.
Facetiously and wrote Paul's son, and then Googled it and saw that James McCartney, Paul's son, was in town last night for a show at Petit Campus.
Yep.
Spitting image of Sir Paul.
It's weird.
The same smile, the same cheeks.
Yeah, he was over at McLean's with
you
his
must
dad.
Have tripped. Out.
I couldn't believe it. He's, you know, and he's a very subtle guy. He likes to stay away from the spotlight, obviously. And I was talking to him, and I swear to God. He's the son of God. I swear to God, he blessed me and everything. He said, "God bless you, Jay." And he talks like his father, too.
The Liverpudlian accent.
Oh, God. And
hello, love.
Just a great guy. Great to hang out with him. And I hope his show went well. I couldn't make it out. But really, really nice guy. And I was amazed that his DNA was on my hand.
I wish I'd known about that. I was in the neighborhood and was at Casa del Popolo last night watching Sarah Jane Scouten play.
Okay.
Wonderful set. Her triumphant return from her Canadian tour.
Okay.
And
was the stream up?
No, no, it actually wasn't. And then halfway through the show, it came back up. So,
okay.
So she played a whole other set. And, and the TSN audience was over the moon. The bosses, a little less so, but the audience just ate it up, man.
Great.
What can I say?
Well, she's talented. Stream or no stream.
And now our live stream is back up. So,
yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, Miss Sarah Jane Scouten. Gotcha. having fun, Jay?
Yes, I am.
All right, good.
I am. I like doing this.
Doing what?
Doing
radio?
This. Yes.
Me too, man. I want to do this more often.
Yeah, we should.
How do we do this 5 nights a week?
I don't know. I don't
know. I'll make you a deal. I'll stop packing a week's worth of shows into one night.
Yeah. It's amazing.
The
last
few weeks have been insane. This week, we only have three guests. We're taking it easy tonight.
Right.
But last week, I think we had six. The week before, we had seven. Makes for an entertaining podcast, I'll tell you that.
And in all different
makes for
walks.
A super stressful Monday night.
It does, but we bring it to you from all different walks of life, all different genres of the sports industry.
That's what we try to do.
Yeah. Hey, we just did boxing and Olympics and paraplegic archery.
Paralympic
archery. Sorry. Oh, boy.
All right. Well, on that note,
we're
going to be joined by a former expo in a couple of weeks, if not next week.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Very excited about that.
Which one?
I'm going to, with confidence, say the third tallest expo in history.
Oh, come on.
Oh, come on. You can figure that one out.
Randy Johnson.
Right.
Guillermo Moda.
Nope.
Graham Lloyd.
Nope.
Graham Lloyd was
Jimmy.
Up there.
Jeff Jude.
Yeah, that's who you got, man.
That a boy, Jimmy?
Yeah.
Jeff Juden.
Number two in the tallest would have been John Rauch.
Ah, that's right.
Number three
the
would
angry
be,
John Rauch.
One of my favorite games of all time. Remind me after the break, I'll tell you my John Rauch story. But got in touch with Jeff Juden, and he expressed an interest to come on the show. Said he has fond memories of Montreal.
Yes, he does. Randy Tiemann's proverbial bull in a china shop against the Houston Astros.
I want to talk to him about the Canada Day game.
I'm going to talk to him about that brawl. That's awesome.
This is the Kaufman Show, and we'll be back.
Inside me and twist it all around. I want love to grab my fingers gently, slam them in a doorway, put my face into the ground. I want love to murder my own mother and take her off to somewhere like hell or up above. And I want love to change my friends to enemies, change my friends to enemies, show me how it's all my fault. And I won't let love disrupt, corrupt, or interrupt me. I won't let love disrupt, corrupt, or interrupt me. Yeah, I won't let love disrupt, corrupt, or interrupt me anymore.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. This is Mr. Jack White.
Walk right up and bite me. Grab a hold of me and fight me. Leave me dying on the ground. And I want love to spin my mouth wide open and cover
love interrupted. This song sounds so much like Son of a Preacher Man, it's not even funny.
The opening riff does.
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah.
Maybe Jimmy can find that for us to go out on. We can compare and contrast. In the meantime, let's go to Broadway.
Now?
Why not?
Okay.
Why not? Not.
You got a show planned?
I do.
Oh, okay.
I do. It's an off-Broadway thing. It's not much, but it's a start.
I did off-Broadway.
Off-Broadway?
I did.
Really?
Yes.
Do tell.
In 2002, I was a part of my brother's off-Broadway play called Killing Jar Jar about a bunch of guys in line for the new Star Wars movie. I played five parts in that.
Where off-Broadway was it?
It was right near Phantom of the Opera. It wasn't far from there. 40, 42nd.
Okay, well, I got it. That is closer to Broadway, the Broadway Theater Broadway, than Broadway and 4th, right, where we're heading right
no,
now.
No, it was a great place. Sold out 29 shows, 30 shows. Sold out. Everyone.
Look
all,
at you.
All seven people in the theater. No, it was good. It was a good run. It was a lot of fun.
Well, I know there's at least nine people where Ben Christensen is right now, because we're calling him at the MLB Fan Cave in New York City on Broadway and 4th. Good evening, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic, man. What's shaking?
Oh, not much. Just watching the Oakland A's put a hurt on the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim as Ricardo Marquez sits next to me, sullen as usual.
Hey, do me a favor. Ask Ricardo a question for us.
Yeah, totally.
Tell him that we just don't know. Our computers aren't up. How many home runs does Albert Pujols have this year?
So Dave and company wants to know, how many home runs has Albert Pujols hit this season?
Grand total of one.
That'll be one.
That'll be one amazing home run.
It looked good. It looked good.
Well, you know, I don't like to kick people when they're down, and we all know that Albert Pujols is going to turn it around. And frankly, the only people I think that are upset right now are Angels fans and the people that own him in their fantasy leagues.
Yes. And possibly Vegas.
And possibly, yeah. Anybody that picked him to lead the American League in home runs this year. he's a few behind Mr. Hamilton. Now, you, unlike most of North America, I'd imagine, have seen every single one of Josh Hamilton's home runs live as they happen.
I have. I've also seen every single one of Josh Hamilton's bat launches into the crowd. Well, in which case, he's had six of those this season so far.
To be fair, you've seen everything so far this year.
Yes, I have.
But Hamilton has to be one of the highlights, no?
Yeah, actually, this whole last week was fantastic. I'd say actually the biggest highlight of him going on that huge home run tear was Gordon Mack, the Philly fan that we have here, has Hamilton on his fantasy team, and he benched him for the entire week.
No way.
No way.
Oh, that's it.
He really did. And, he's a little downtrod about that one himself.
That almost makes it okay that you benched Joey Votto this week.
Yeah, exactly. But luckily I had a good enough lead on Lindsey Gensel, my competitor, and so it didn't hurt me that much.
No, but obviously when Votto hits three homers in a game, including the walk-off winner,
yeah,
you must want to be kicking yourself a bit.
You know, I was, but the run up the stairs and down the home run slide, you know, kind of smoothed it out for me.
Why don't you tell everybody about that?
So anytime there are two things we have in the fan cave. We have a gong, which is actually left over from our intense 2-day interview when we were still part of the top 30 down in Arizona. So anytime a home run is hit, based on the amount of runs that are scored per home run, that's how many times we hit the gong. And then we have the slide upstairs, which is a lot like in Miller Park. And so anytime a home run is hit, then we always take the slide for our team or any of the guys on our fantasy squad.
Again, part of the summer camp nature that is the MLB Fan Club. Sorry, MLB Fan Cave. I think I'm part of the MLB Fan Club for the MLB Fan Cave.
I would definitely think so.
And Ben is competing. It doesn't sound like it's a competition because it's so much fun, but the truth of the matter at the end of the day is that Ben is in competition with the eight other Fan Cave dwellers, and you, listening public, can do something to help him. You can go and vote for him on the MLB Fan Cave web page. Right, Ben?
Awesome.
Yeah, it would be awesome.
Absolutely
right?
Right. That would be great.
All it is karma, really. I mean, you've entertained us week in, week out. The least we can do is vote for you, right?
That'd be very nice. It's like a little trade-off right there.
Big fans of karma on the Kaufman Show. We're talking to Ben Christensen. He's at the MLB Fan Cave, and you've had a lot of interesting stuff this week. You had the Yvette Brothers concert. Today, Adam Lambert was in. That's less exciting for me, but I'm sure a lot of people would be really interested in that. And you had the cover model for the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue hanging out in the fan cave this week, Miss Kate Upton.
That was interesting. Yeah, that was very interesting to have her around.
And not only was she there, but there was $1 million on the line as well.
Yes. MLB 2K12 Perfect Game Challenge, the finals were held here. And it was probably one of the most intense yet depressing things I've ever seen in my life. Intense for the guy who won, because he did it, and I think the final score was 10-1.
Oh wow!
And he did it with the Yankees over the Tigers, and depressing because I just felt so horrible, as the rest of us did, for the guy who ended up losing, because obviously he's not going home with $1 million. So
does he go home with anything?
Yeah, I think all the guys made an agreement that they would get about $20,000. So it's a fair trade off. You get a free trip to New York, you play some video games, you hang out at the MLB Fan Cave, you stare at Kate Upton for a little bit, and you walk away with $20,000.
Yeah, what was the last time any of you guys have seen a woman stuck in that cave? By the way,
there's two in there.
Oh, there is. Yeah. Oh, okay, sorry.
Outside of Ashley and
yeah.
Lindsay.
No. Sorry, I didn't know.
every 20 seconds, when we look outside the window,
oh, okay,
and see all the beautiful women of New York passing by, and we just, you know,
do you run into the window
out, like, oh, come in,
but, like a bird into a skyscraper, just run into that window. Whoops. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I can vouch that a lot of very pretty girls walk by the corner of Broadway and 4th.
Oh, I know it. I know it.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
None of them came to my play in 2002.
Well, you shouldn't have been in a play about Jar Jar Binks. No. Maybe it would have helped.
Doesn't attract a lot of ladies, no.
So how did you guys keep your cool with the Sports Illustrated swimsuit model hanging out with you?
Actually, that part was really interesting because there was a video that Ricky Nass and Ricardo Marquez made where they do a little dancing for Miss Upton, and the video is actually on the MLB Fan Cave website, which I highly recommend everybody watch because it's pretty funny. But for me, I was so in the zone with the Orioles-Rangers game that was going on as part of the doubleheader. I was literally 2.5 feet away from Kate Upton, staring at my Samsung Galaxy Note, watching the game, and hadn't a care in the world that she was standing that close to me.
I'm so disappointed in you right now.
I think most of them there. I would say most of North America is on that one. So
Ben's game is out the window. Yeah,
well, yeah, exactly.
That or Ben realizes that she was there as a like the sirens on the rocks to lure him away from baseball, and maybe that was the test.
Exactly.
Ah, interesting dynamic.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I hang out with
I need to go out and change my name to Odysseus, is what you're saying.
That's right. You know what? I'm surrounded by Greeks here, Ben.
Ooh.
Yes, there are four people in studio, and one of them's named Kaufman.
Oh, nice.
So I guess the influence, yes, you are. It is Homer's Odyssey.
Yeah.
with a little bit more baseball.
A tad. You know, I think Homer really could have been onto something if he had included, you know, a suicide squeeze or an infield fly rule here and there. But, you know, clearly he really didn't know what he was writing about.
Yeah, this is, you know, pre-Old Hoss Radburn. I don't know how in-depth on baseball you're going to get on that. That sound in the background, Jay, I'm imagining was Ashley cheering when the runners advanced to scoring position in the San Fran Colorado game.
Yes, it was. And, Albert Pujols lines a single into left field.
Hey.
Look at that.
Good-looking single.
You know, before you start doing play-by-play based on the games, I think we need the expressed written consent of you-know-who.
That is a valid point, actually, yeah.
I think they're upstairs. Actually, they're probably done for the day, but maybe you can get that clearance, and then you can play Vin Scully for us next week.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you put the podcast up on the web, just be sure to bleep everything out that I've already discussed about anything baseball related, so it'll really save my neck on that one.
that'll be boy, we better talk about something else fast, huh? Have you ever
it'll seem like you're like replaying like Goodfellas on Lifetime or something like that, but instead of like editing everything, it's just a bunch of bleeps and blurs. So,
did you
funny.
Just say Goodfellas on Lifetime?
They play Goodfellas on Lifetime routinely, and it's all because of Lorraine Bracco. I have no idea why.
That's funny. I remember it on CBS and Joe Pesci going, "Hey, go feel your mother."
That's worse than the original thing that he said.
Not really.
Well, I don't know. It's definitely creepier.
It's comparable.
Okay.
I'm happy to know that you're a fan of that movie as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, one of the you know, we keep talking about, we talked about Lock, Stock earlier. We talked about Big Lebowski. I think we're just naming movies with
Fight Club.
Fight Club. Movies with amazing soundtracks is, I think, the theme of the night. That and sports. Right, sports. Yeah.
True romance. If you're going to talk about movies with amazing soundtracks, you got one right there.
That is, and one of the greatest scenes in movie history.
Bingo.
Ben Christensen, what do you have on tap for this week? What can we, what can you direct us to online? Any new exciting videos? I know that your prediction of 400, if Josh Hamilton keeps doing what he's doing, you're going to make me look awful silly when we go back to the tapes. And I go, no way is someone going to hit 400, Ben Christensen. Come on.
I know. And David Wright, who's actually going to be here on Wednesday.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Hey, all right. Nice. That's pretty cool. Because
yeah.
He has no excuse.
Oh, yeah, no, exactly.
He's a New York, you know, he's in New York. He'd better come by and hang out. I imagine the Mets and the Yankees should be there more frequently than anybody else, really.
Yeah. I mean, come on, guys. Jeez.
Yeah. Where's your
you're only one subway stop away.
Where's your gift basket from Derek Jeter?
Oh.
Wow.
I think that's funny. Come on.
I think it is too.
Okay. Good. Yeah. So, anything on tap this week that we should be excited about? To follow you on Twitter at Shaka Brody, if I may add.
Yeah, we actually have a Brooklyn rapper named Josh Bays coming in tomorrow as part of our concert series. And the winner of The Voice, whose name escapes me at the moment, is going to be dropping in this week as well. And then, yeah, like I said, Wednesday, David Wright. But we're not really sure what we're going to be filming with him yet. Hopefully it's going to be some kind of a crazy sketch. But today we had Brewers catcher Jonathan LaCroix stop in. And I think the video that we're producing for that, or that we shot this morning and that's going to go up online, I think this next week, is going to be worthwhile. Because all it was like a speed dating questionnaire for him. And I'm not going to go into any of the questions on that because I think the surprise of what it is really going to sell it.
Oh, you have to leave us in suspense with, I mean, just saying the words Jonathan LaCroix just makes Montreal so excited. Even the whole country just woke up.
That's a good point.
I bet you just gained 1,000 followers on Twitter, Ben.
I would hope so. Yeah. I think I gained 4 today. So,
hey.
And none of them were Adam Lambert fans. I'm shocked by that.
Okay, what was that like?
You know, it was interesting because I didn't really know what to expect. You know, I've never really listened to his music, but I gotta say, I mean, I'll admit the kid's got some pipes on him.
Well, if you're anything like me, you haven't seen American Idol since like Ruben Studdard was on the show.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think the gray haired dude who won it in season 3, whose name escapes me, is Taylor Hicks.
Taylor
was, like,
Hicks.
The last season.
Yes.
That was the last season I watched.
Oh, my.
Yeah, which was interesting because that was also the season I believe Daughtry was on, who came in here. And another great artist that we had in here that I was not expecting.
Well, obviously there's a pipeline between MLB and reality singing competitions.
Exactly.
I wish I knew another one to throw out another example. Maybe you'll have the cast of America's Got Talent in there next time.
Ooh, that wouldn't be too bad.
No, you just sounded way too excited for that, man. Come on.
No, I honestly don't know who won that, so I don't know what I'd be getting into on that one.
I don't know who won The Voice, so, you know.
I don't know why I can't remember the guy's name.
Oh, that's okay. Well,
he'll be here.
Well, and it'll be awesome, and I can guarantee you that he's got a hell of a voice.
I'm pretty sure he does.
Ben Christensen on this.
If Christina Aguilera says he's got a great voice, he's got a great voice.
Oh, obviously.
Yeah, that's all it takes.
Yeah.
And if CeeLo can endorse you as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the dude from Maroon 5, isn't he in that
yeah.
as well? All right.
Yeah, he is.
Stellar. That's more than an off-Broadway cast, I'll tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
So on this momentous day where Bryce Harper has hit his first of what will end up being, what, 778 home runs?
I'm gonna go 704. I think he's just gonna come up a little shy.
I think Josh Hamilton's gonna do that this year.
I think he might. Actually.
Dude is putting up some PlayStation numbers right now. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, he really is.
It's incredible to watch, and
it's a joy to watch actually.
And we will look forward to watching it throughout the rest of the season, and getting in touch with you every week to get our update on. All the fun stuff that's going on in NYC at the Fan Cave.
It's always fun to be with you guys.
Ben Christensen. Follow him on Twitter at Shaka Brody, SHAKABRODIE. Thank you, friend, and we'll speak soon.
Good. Take care.
Have a good night. When they gather around and started talking, Dustin Billy would take me walking. This is the Kaufman Show. Dusty's going to take us out. Lord knows. The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. Yes, he was. He was. Yes, he was.
A heart full of hurt from a head full of wine. I'll call you back some other time. No way I'm picking up my phone. I'm tired of talking, leave me alone. I can't run and I can't write. And I can't make it home tonight.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar coming in on a little Joel Plaskett. Rolling. Jay's bouncing around.
Yeah. Wow. I like that.
Look at you maturing.
Yeah. I want to get a washboard and start playing with him.
Really?
Yeah, no.
How about one of those, like, the jugs?
I could pull that off.
Yes, you could.
Yeah.
I think it would be quite awesome, actually.
Yeah.
Let's open those phone lines.
Okay.
Let's open them wide. 1-866-896-2546 if you're out of town. 514-790-0990 if you are in the Montreal area. We would love to hear from you. But we're going to go, we're going to go to a state that's been in the news a little bit. We're going to go, down to North Carolina and say hi to our friend Travis. How are you, sir?
You know, not so happy to say where I'm from. Recently.
It's not your fault.
I voted against it, but
obviously. I mean, we anybody that follows you on Twitter knows how you feel about it, right?
Yeah, just a little bit.
It's a crazy world we live in.
And it is.
You think about the chef de mission for Canada at the Olympics, and I think it shows that Canada's a little bit ahead of the game.
You know, you always have been. You know, at times, there's been some things, but still, in general. You know.
In general. You know, we like to speak in generalities. It's way easier than specifics.
Yeah, you know, growing up, my mom would always say, you know, Canada's cool, they're nice up there. People are level-headed, and they're not cruel to each other. And that's how I like to live my life.
Well, I think that's
not so much like the other people who voted for that amendment, though.
Well, again, you know, there's you can figure out how the splits are made, and I saw a few graphs and charts, and you know, it just reaffirms my belief that an education is important, because if you look at the way that vote was split between the educated and the less educated, that was pretty much the lines of how the vote went down.
And the turnout was pathetic. It was like 30%. You know, that's terrible.
Yeah, it was about the turnout in the last federal election in Canada, wasn't it? It was 40.
Yeah,
we
were having those every 3 months. So
that's true.
You know.
That's true. Anyway, what's going on, Travis?
Well, you know, I know that the Orioles have had a weird season, but they're not that compelling. You know, jeez.
Their helmets are. Bring back the old school helmets.
I find it quite compelling, to be honest with you. I love that it's middle of May, and the Orioles are, I guess they're, a game back right now after tonight?
No, I think that, yeah.
That's unbelievable. You know, and I'll tell you something else, is that, no, they're in first place right now. They are tied with Tampa Bay, 22-14, a .611 winning percentage. Your first place, Baltimore Orioles.
If someone has to knock the Blue Jays out of the playoffs, why not Baltimore?
Well, I still want Tampa to win the World Series.
Well, of course.
Of course.
It's amazing. Blue Jays just can't get a break, can they?
What do you mean?
Toronto always
falls. Well, when the Yankees and the Red Sox aren't doing so well, you know, the Orioles come out of nowhere.
Let's see
the
Orioles.
And if it's not the Orioles, it's Tampa Bay.
Let's see the Orioles prorate this to a full season.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, yeah, like you said, it's the middle of May.
Which is still, very, again, you know, we are over the 20% mark of the season.
Yeah, but we'll know who's for real by the beginning of July.
Cleveland Indians have a 2-game lead in the Central. The Washington Nationals are in first place in the National League East, something that we don't talk about much here.
No.
The LA Dodgers are 24-11. They're playing at a 686 clip right now. Did anybody call that before the season? Not a chance. Baseball is wonderful right now. You know, and last year this time, Travis, it was the Pirates. And all the way up into the All-Star game, everybody couldn't believe that the Pirates were finally competitive. So let the Orioles with Luis Ayala and Andy Chavez and Nick Johnson.
Andino.
How about Exposito? Have you seen that guy?
No.
There's a guy named Luis Exposito, Exposito. His name has Expos in it.
It's like King playing for the Kings.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, except he plays for the Orioles.
I'm talking about in hockey.
Well, yeah, but would it be like King playing for the Kings if Exposito played for the Expos?
Right.
It would be like if Orioles played for the Orioles.
Right.
I don't know why we're making them all Latin American ballplayers.
Orioles?
Well, just keep moving, man.
Orioles?
Just keep moving forward. Okay. Travis, what's going on?
Don't put that back to me, man. You're special here.
You're right. Okay, fine. Travis, do you have anything else you want to talk about other than the Baltimore Orioles?
I don't. Well, other than the Baltimore Orioles, I didn't know if you. Obviously, I couldn't hear the first hour, but I don't know if you talked about it. But Vladdy with the Jays.
I'm sorry. Say that one more time.
Vladdy Guerrero with the Jays.
We opened on it very briefly, and I'm incredibly excited. I was too excited the day it came out.
Yeah.
I felt like a kid on Christmas. I mean, all caps on Twitter when I saw it. Vladdy signs with the Jays. I sent my buddy Sam in New York a tweet saying, go buy a Jays cap.
That's how bad it is being an Expos fan right now.
I texted all of my Toronto friends, Vladdy's a Jay. And the first thing that struck me was the backlash from the Toronto baseball blogging cable. You know, the Dustin Parks, the Andrew Stotens, the Drew Fairservice, all these guys who I really, really, really respect and know their baseball more than I ever could, especially the modern game. And none of them, Scott Lewis is another one, they kind of shot me down right away and did not get why Expos fans were so excited over this. And somebody wrote me a message saying, don't listen to them, Kauffman. If Ken Griffey Jr. came out of retirement, I would be so excited right now. And yeah, it's part of it is the little kid in me.
What if Dave Steeb is in the training camp? How would they react then?
I think it's just a different story because Vladimir Guerrero was the last great Expo.
He probably was the greatest Expo. When you look at it. And he probably was the greatest player to ever don the Expos uniform. So I can, of course, I greet it with cynicism, but at the same time, I can understand why people are happier about this or excited or at least a little bit stoked. We've had nothing to cheer about in the last 8 years.
Now, the question that was asked to me right in the wake of it was, would you be as excited if he was signing with Seattle or with Arizona? And yes, because I'm happy that Vlad gets another shot at it, but it's so much deeper than that for me, Travis. It's that we get to see him. If he can make the team, we get to see him on TV every single day now.
Yep.
And, I mean, I don't know if he'll play every day. I don't know if he can play every day.
Or play at all. Yeah.
But I can't wait to see. And I think it's so exciting.
And I'll tell you something. You'll see the largest congregation of Expos jerseys in that ballpark when he makes his debut. More than you see anyone has seen in over 8 years.
I will tell you right now that unless it's a Monday night, I will be in Toronto the day that he makes his debut.
I wish I could. I'll be there September 2nd if he's there.
Yeah, you're gonna come up for that game on the 2nd against Tampa.
I am gonna come up.
Cool.
With my Vladdy jersey.
Oh, good
for you.
Good stuff. I would think that I will be there. I don't know if I will be in those seats, but I will definitely be there.
This is a secret admission, but I was actually a Jays fan too as a kid.
That's okay. That's okay.
Yeah, I know ALNL, but still. So that's why I think it's for me personally. I'm not a stats guy. I know nothing about it. I'm a nerd, but not with that. And when it comes to just the visceral joy of baseball, thinking Vladimir Guerrero will be playing in a team I like, I'm okay with it. I don't care about anything. Maybe if he makes a team. Yeah.
Imagine he makes a difference for them.
Smile. You can't stop smiling thinking about that.
I have this the second it happened, and I think I fired off a message to Buck 65 right away. and said, I'm picturing him hitting a pinch hit home run on the last day of the season to give the Jays that second wild card spot.
To move ahead of the Orioles. His former team that didn't believe in him.
That's right.
Perfect.
It's weird to think that it took this long for Guerrero to get the chance, but you got to think that Alex Anthopoulos is the reason that the history there between the two, that Anthopoulos got his start in Montreal with the Expos. He was a kid, and one of his first jobs was to open Vladimir Guerrero's mail to assign the autograph stuff in the clubhouse, not getting paid. He swept floors, man. Not that long ago, if you think about it. That's devotion. And that's what gets you to the top. And it's really cool to see that he can now kind of return that favor. And there are no promises. He's made it very clear there are no bad minor league signings. The money is not guaranteed unless he makes the major leagues. There is no guarantee in the contract that he will make the major leagues. He has to prove it to the club. I'll tell you, the whole city is cheering for him. And like I said to, what's his name? Jay Stenhouse, the media relations guy for the Blue Jays. When the news came out, you would have thought that Montreal had a baseball team. People were so excited here. And it's just weird to think that somebody like Vladimir Guerrero could potentially help make the Blue Jays more of a national team. Because it's a tough sell right now. It's a tough sell in Quebec, I'll tell you.
I'm not buying it.
There you go.
I'm not buying it.
But if Vladdy's on that team, you'll buy it a lot more.
I'll buy into Vladdy.
Yeah.
Yeah, which obviously comes with buying into the team as well.
Right.
So, yeah, no, I agree. And I would love to see it. I would love to see it, but you know how I am, Dave. Very cynical, very
you?
Skeptical.
No.
Yeah.
No, that's no. That you they no, wrong.
Yeah.
Who are you? I don't have a cynical co-host.
Well, that's the whole reason I'm here, I think.
I'm the grumpy one. You're supposed to be the happy dude.
I'm so co-host. Happy.
You have a co-host who is Jar Jar Binks.
Jeez.
Don't worry, it was an off Broadway production.
Yes.
Around the corner from Phantom of the Opera, which isn't that off Broadway.
No,
it's pretty on Broadway, man.
It was incredible. It was this old rundown theater that doesn't exist anymore, by the way.
Yeah, it's
like
probably a condo or something, yeah. I think you can drop the off, though, next time. I think it's just off. If you're that close to Broadway, like if it's in Jersey, it's off.
All right, I'll say off Broadway. It just makes me look better anyway.
And, well, that's what I'm thinking.
Right.
You know?
It's one thing that I can put down on my bucket list. Do an off Broadway play.
That's right.
Play five parts in an off Broadway play.
Your retroactive bucket list.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually... I'm putting on a lot of check marks on that lately, so.
Well, I think the next time, instead of saying that it was, what was it called, Killing Jar Jar?
Killing Jar Jar.
Rent.
Rent?
Yeah, you were an off-Broadway production of Rent.
Yeah, well, hopefully that'll be way after my bucket list expires.
It won 3 Tonys and a Drama Desk Award. Travis, thank you for the call tonight, man, and thanks for waiting for the online feed to come up. You'll be able to catch everything on the podcast.
Have a good one.
You too, buddy. Travis from Asheville, North Carolina. You can follow him on Twitter at The Polemicist. A very fun and interesting follow.
The Polemicist.
Yes.
Or you can follow The Kaufman Show.
You could. You could. I recommend it.
Or J-Pub Radio.
He's pretty good, too.
He's not bad.
We like him.
He's cynical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of funny. Did you end up getting your Muppets tickets with Amanda?
No.
You didn't?
No.
Why not?
I'm not going to see the Muppets.
You're not?
No.
Why not?
Why would I?
Oh, I thought that was like a thing for you too.
No, I enjoy the Muppets, but I enjoy making fun of Amanda for loving the Muppets so much, especially that new crappy movie that they came out with. I'm old school. I love the old 70s Muppets. You know, it was a little bit more edgy.
It was way more edgy.
Yeah, it was garnered a little bit towards an adult audience, and this new Disney stuff, I can't buy into it.
I got tickets.
You did?
Of course I did.
Who are you going with?
I don't know yet.
You can ask Amanda. She'll go.
Did she not get tickets?
I don't know if she did or not. I said it in passing, and
I will do that. I will ask her if she did not get tickets, I will offer my other tickets.
I'm pretty sure she'll go.
The Just for Laughs Festival is right around the corner, and 30th year. and they've got a huge lineup planned.
It's great.
Could not be more excited for it. And got tickets for, usually I stay away from the gallows, Jay, but I couldn't resist.
I took my vacation time in July.
Not August. Really?
Yes.
That changes our Fenway plans, unless you're planning on going away.
I don't know what I'm doing. It's difficult, you know. I know I'm not going to no damn Muppet show, that's for sure. So ask Stein.
That was very Franklin and Arrested. I ain't going to no damn Muppet show.
Well, I am the grumpy co-host.
I feel like they're
got to fill the part.
There's got to be a Muppet in there for you.
I like
Statler and Waldorf, right?
Yeah. I like the saxophone guy. He called in last week. I like that guy. It's like the way he has like one line in every movie, and it's always funny. And you obviously know he's some kind of a weed head or something. He's funny.
Weed head, huh?
Yeah. He doesn't say anything in the new Disney ones, apparently. But back in the 70s and early 80s, he was saying a lot.
Silenced by Eisner, huh?
Yeah. I can't remember what the name of the character is, but he's great.
I'm sure you can look it up.
Yeah.
In the meantime, Animal is pretty high on my list.
He's good.
He looks like John Bonham.
Yeah, and that's...
He plays like Keith Moon, and he looks like John Bonham.
I can't believe we're talking about philosophical Muppet stuff right now, but...
So should we go back to the student protest so that Buddy can call in like last week?
Yeah.
Wait, maybe he's calling right now. Hey, guys, Muppets?
Muppets. It's a sports show. Muppets. Animal used to chase after women. Remember that? He used to go, woman.
The term is carousing.
Yeah.
Animal used to be a carouser.
Well, he used to chase after them and run after them. They used to run, and they're all in bikinis and stuff. A little edgy, you know?
Sure.
Now it's drums. Now his high, his crack is drums. Drums. He sees drums and he goes crazy.
Well, you always go back to music. Stupid. You know, I mean, obviously he went through his philandering stages.
Right.
And Animal can only be an animal so long. One has to calm down.
Yes, calm down. Animal needs some Viagra or something. It's been a while.
This just degenerated into madness.
What are we talking about? We're talking about...
This started with Vlad Guerrero.
A fictitious Muppet drummer using Viagra. Okay.
This segment, by the way, has been brought to you by Flaming Moe's, the finest damn drink in town. Do you know what the secret ingredient in Flaming Moe's is?
I don't.
It's cough syrup.
Ah.
Simple children's cough syrup. That's what makes... The flame in Flaming Moe's. Funnily enough, cough syrup is also what Guillermo Mota is blaming his 100-game suspension in Major League Baseball on. Supposedly, he took an over-the-counter children's cough medicine, which had some sort of banned stimulant in it, and it's his third, otherwise he wouldn't be getting 100 games.
Was it specifically a children's cough medicine?
That was the,
Oh, I'm feeling so terrible. I'm going to go over to the pharmacy and get some weak children's...
There's something very funny about...
Cough medicine and take that.
Flaming Moe's, man. I love that. I think that is just the funniest thing ever. And this segment has been brought to you by Flaming Moe's and the children's cough syrup. Because I can't think of any other way to have this segment make any sense.
So
that's how we bring it back to sports, Mr. Farrar.
Is he appealing?
That's how the pros do it.
Is he appealing it, or?
I don't think, I don't think.
But can he? I mean, I guess he can't.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I'll just take it and shut up. He's washed up anyway.
If he does appeal, Jay.
Yes.
It's going to be a bit of a process right now, because Shyam Das, who is the arbitrator for Major League Baseball.
Yes.
Who overturned Major League Baseball on the Ryan Braun steroids case,
yes.
We all remember that,
yes,
has been fired by Major League Baseball.
Really?
That happened today, yes. He, serving at the pleasure of MLB and the union, Das could have been fired with written notice by either side at any point over the last 13 years. While we don't know the cause for MLB's action quite yet, it's not the furthest leap of assumption to imagine it's something to do with the Braun decision.
I was going to say, what are the grounds on that pink slip?
Well, again, it's that they could do whatever they wanted.
Right.
And either side could do it. Now, MLB went to all these lengths to clean up the game and then put its neck on the line by outing the MVP of the National League as a culprit. For that to be overturned, and again, you know, we had Kaufman Show legal analyst Dan Gradinsky on to talk about that, and a whole lot of sketchiness, a whole lot of conjecture. That's for damn sure.
It really is. It seems like they're delving into corruption in order to be uncorrupted.
Needless to say,
firing a guy for a decision that he made. I just want to see what the grounds are on that.
I
guess to get a squeaky clean image, you have to get into a little bit of corruption.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yes, it's the political way.
Yeah.
You could argue, though, that this was done as a preventative measure in advance of whatever hearing with Guillermo Mota, that they didn't want that one overturned, too.
Yeah, it's a far cry from Ryan Braun to Guillermo Mota. I don't think anybody cares about that. Guillermo Mota would qualify as a fantastic scapegoat for Major League Baseball.
Not to mention a former Expo. We're good
exactly.
at that, eh?
We're good at scapegoats. Yeah, that's what we do. That's what we do.
Next week, we blame Brad Fulmer for a litany of things on the Kauffman Show. It's nearing the end, Jack.
It's piano.
It is. It's Jack White.
Mm. More Jack White, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's so good. Go
Blunderbuss.
It's too hard standing on my own two feet. Been running too long on an endless street. Well, I guess I should go to sleep.
You're listening to The Kauffman Show. We've got one more segment. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. You know what this sound is. So we're back. And those are the Detroit Cobras, who I'm pretty sure are playing better baseball right now than the Detroit Tigers.
Oh, man.
July 14th, they will be in Montreal at Il Mattore. And I guess that means I know where I'll be on July 14th at the Detroit Cobras concert, checking out that song. Cannot wait. Our good friend and wonderful sound man, John Kakalakis, is here. Good evening, John.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you. And yourselves?
We are great.
Great. I wanted to add something
yeah.
since we're in the suspension conversation.
Yes, yes. Leaving
on
us
May
in suspense.
30th, the Minnesota Twins fans, although their team is atrocious this year, they can welcome the return of Manny Ramirez.
Minnesota?
Well, because he's playing for Oakland and they'll be in Minnesota.
Okay.
Well, his 50-game suspension ends on May 29th.
Who do you think has more in the tank, John? Manny Ramirez or Vlad Guerrero?
Well, Manny Ramirez hasn't played in a long time.
Right.
So it's a great question.
Vlad had a pretty mediocre full season last year, DHing in Baltimore.
He hit .290, 13 home runs. And, you know, it's not bad.
It's the production. I mean, anybody who watched him play, it's not the Vladimir Guerrero. It's not even the Vladimir Guerrero that helped bring Texas to the World Series the year before.
Right.
Right.
But he's coming in as a utility player.
Yeah. Very much so.
Listen, you get a utility guy that's putting up those kind of numbers, you're a happy ball club. You know, those are John Vanderwall numbers right there.
Well, then he's set. Hall of Fame career, right?
Greatest bench player of all time.
John Vanderwall?
Sure. Look at his numbers, man. Look what he did with Colorado and Montreal. It's amazing.
Huh.
Yeah. Take a look.
I'd go Matt Stairs before I'd go John Vanderwall.
Yeah, Matt Stairs hit for power.
Yeah. I feel like Vlad Guerrero's assuming the Matt Stairs position if he
That's what it's going to be. He's going to be an RBI guy. I mean, it's clear. I mean, he's not going to be laying down bunts, that's for sure.
No. You know how I don't think Vladdy's really been able to steal bases since he left Montreal.
No.
Not, I mean, maybe that first year, that MVP season in Anaheim.
Yeah, you'll be looking at a guy who's, I mean, if he does make the team, you're going to be looking at a guy that they're going to put in later innings when they're using a lot of pitchers. But, of course, it's DH, so it doesn't matter. And, close games, men on, when they don't need speed. Obviously, he's not going to come up with empty bases. So, I mean, you're going to see him in later innings where they need a kind of power guy that can hit it off the wall and bring in a couple of guys in who are in scoring position. Hopefully.
I want to finish up on something that happened to me this week that I... hasn't really happened to me too much before, and it's funny because it happened twice. We were interviewed by Jonah Carey for the upcoming Expos book, which was really, frankly, one of the highlights of my life. And I hope that I make it into the book. I hope that I at least get a quote in there, and I hope he spells my name right. And I can't wait to see that. But I got home from our lunch with Anakin, and we were it was Jonah and Jay and Anakin and myself, and we sat around on the mezzanine at McLean's for, 2.5-3 hours, just talking baseball, and it went by like, it was amazing. I got an email that night from someone who he follows me on Twitter, but other than that, the name did not ring a bell, and I assumed that it was a journalism student, and he said, I'm doing this project on something baseball related, and do you mind if I send you some questions? So he sends me a bunch of questions. And it starts off with, like, who were your favorite Expos? Delino DeShields and Vladimir Guerrero, by the way. And what were your earliest memories, which I actually talked about with you guys as well, and, right. And going to games with my grandfather, and how I can so vividly remember holding his hands and just I can picture his hand holding, like, sitting on the armrest. And I have very vivid memories of my grandfather's hands, which is, I don't know. Anyway, well... we'll delve into that one next week, Dr. Farrar. And the interview kind of culminated with, what are your thoughts on Loria? And what were your thoughts when Loria bought the team? And what were your thoughts when they gave up the land? And what were your thoughts when the Marlins won the World Series in 03? And I could very much, very quickly see that this was about Loria, that everything else was kind of periphery and not going to make whatever he was trying to achieve. His name's Thomas Pietrakupa. He's 17 years old. And I was really flattered that I was able to help this kid with his homework assignment. I thought it was really cool that he reached out to me and very mature young man called me for a follow-up conversation. And, you know, it showed me something, Jay, that 17-year-old kid wants to know more about baseball, wants to know more about the history of baseball in this town. And I learned something about myself that day. I don't blame Loria. I don't blame them with that hatred that I had for so long. There are so many people that are at fault for the Expos leaving town. And as somebody once said to me, they didn't build the coffin. They just stuck the couple of final nails into it. So... I don't know, something's happened to me in the last little while, Jay, where my bitterness has completely left. And I've probably never missed baseball as much as I have in the last 3 weeks. The Carter thing, it made me miss baseball like October of 2004. It just brought it right back, hanging out with all the Expos people, and it just brought me right back to where I used to be. But I don't hate anybody over it anymore, and it feels really good. It feels really good. Yeah, I'm jealous. jealous of what Loria did. I'm jealous that they have a new stadium and that they have a World Series and that it could have been us. But one of them was under Blockbuster Video, Wayne Huizenga.
Right.
And it was, 03 was all Loria.
Yeah.
With the Expos computers and Jack McKeon. And this must have been before Josh Beckett started golfing before his starts. I miss baseball. I miss it with all my heart. Anybody who listens to our show knows that. But I don't feel that hate. I don't feel that bitterness. And any of you who do, anybody who reads Jack Todd every Monday and sees that Laurie and Samson are still the zeros, that blame can really be spread around. It's not just them. And we'll get into it later. Or next week, or the week after. Or ad infinitum.
Something different is happening, David.
Yeah, I know.
People are looking ahead instead of looking behind.
And it's a great honor that they're asking us our opinions.
And it's a first step.
Hot damn. I want to thank our guests. What an honor to speak to Mark Tewksbury. That was amazing. Can't wait for the Olympics. Thank you to Matt Casavant. Taught this the sheltered idiot a little bit about the sweet science. And as always, my good friend Ben Christensen, please vote for him at the MLB Fan Cave website. We got to keep that kid in New York. I don't want him going out west. John, thank you. Jimmy, as always, wonderful. And Mr. F, I'll see you next week.
As usual, Mr. Right. K.
I'll see you Joe Kearns this weekend for the 20th anniversary of McLean's Pub. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. We're going to have a great time.
Mr. Plaskett, take us out.
We'll hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. You saw my band in the early days, then you understand why we moved away. You hold a grudge anyway, because it's fun. Davey and me, face down in our suit, some French restaurant. I saw Riviere de Loup last night at a tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman. We'll be back next week.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?